talk briefly about the chapter on obesity. And you might, at the beginning of this, wonder if there's anything new to say about obesity following the extremely comprehensive and excellent Foresight report that came out a few weeks ago. And I know a number of the Sandy Thomas and her co-authors are here today. And in many ways, they have covered the territory very effectively indeed by looking at the scientific background to obesity and, in light of the science, a range of policy options. So I'm going to be quite brief because in many ways the conclusions we reach independently reinforce and support the conclusions that the Foresight team reached, although of course we were approaching it from a slightly different angle in that we were working from the ethical framework that Tom described and the consequent policy framework of the intervention ladder that Roger described to see how that framework plays out when it comes to tackling the public health issue of obesity. So our approach is slightly different, although a number of our conclusions are very similar to those of the Foresight team. And I think it just giving a bit of factual background that is now very familiar to everybody, I'm sure, that the prevalence of obesity is rising rapidly, and particularly of concern is the rising prevalence in children. This figure from 10% to 14% in less than a decade is for children up to the age of 11. If you look at teenagers, then the prevalence has doubled roughly in the last decade. So it's in more than one sense the word a rapidly growing problem. And of course, it is understood on the basis of epidemiological analysis that obesity is likely to be a risk factor for a range of chronic diseases. As with so many of these epidemiological correlations, there are challenges about teasing out confounding variables, but insofar as one can tell, obesity is a significant risk factor. The most recent report was of the Million Women study conducted at Oxford by Valerie Barrell and her team, which suggested that obesity in women is a significant risk factor in certain kinds of cancer. Turning to our ethical framework that Tom introduced, what would be the justification for the state intervening to try and tackle the problem of obesity and the attendant health risks? Well, of the factors that Tom mentioned, the most appropriate or most pertinent ones in this context are the matter of protecting vulnerable groups, particularly children, the role of the state in looking after the interests of children who don't necessarily have the proper agency and independence and autonomy that we've referred to, but also importantly, the fact, as I'll just elucidate a moment, the choices we make that influence our body mass are very much shaped both by the corporate sector and by decisions made by the state. So this is a case in which a justification for intervention would be that industry and indeed government itself is already shaping our lives in such a way that may or may not predispose us to put on weight, and therefore there's a justification for considering whether industry and government should change its behavior and therefore make it easier for us to make choices that disfavor putting on weight. So briefly, as again the Foresight team have so fully and comprehensively enunciated, the causes of obesity are very complex indeed, and this is just a very simple list of some of the things that have changed in our lives over the last 30 or 40 years. And the only important thing to say here, I think, is that although we know that the consequence of these many changes is that the balance between energy in and energy out has changed and the excess energy in is stored as fat, the relative importance of these different causal factors is not well understood. And that means a number of things. It means that there's, in policy terms, not likely to be a single magic bullet. If you want to eradicate a disease, there is, in principle, a magic bullet of vaccination if the vaccine exists. In the case of obesity as a public health problem, there is no magic bullet. And there's no quick fix as well. It also means that when it comes to policy recommendations, if you're stuck up in front of the health minister and the health minister says, well, what on earth should we do about obesity? You can't come up with a simple list. If you do these three things, painful though they be, maybe you'll crack the problem. However, what we can say in general is that in looking at the intake and the expenditure side of the equation that are influenced by these many factors and many others, it is usually easier for people to lose weight or prevent themselves from gaining weight by changing their intake rather than changing their expenditure, even though both make an important contribution. And that's simply because the amount of exercise that you have to do to burn off calories is very large in relation to the ease of consuming calories. So moving on to some of our recommendations and conclusions, as I said, one of the elements of our stewardship framework that we focused on in this particular context was the role of the food industry in all its manifestations, manufacturers, retailers, and restaurant service providers. And the key point here is that the choices that many of us make about food are really determined by what's offered to us, what's shaped and offered to us, and therefore the food industry does have a role in altering our behavior by changing the environment in which we make choices and the options that are open to us. And just to give one example, sorry, I seem to have skipped over a slide because I didn't know what I was talking about. Just to give one example of this, we looked at the question of food labeling, and it's not that food labeling is a magic solution. As I've said, there are no magic bullets here, but if the government's policy is to provide people with information about what's more or less likely to contribute to putting on weight, it seems reasonable that the food industry should also play their part by making it easy to use the information to make choices about food. And as many of you will know, there's been quite a vigorous debate in the food industry and between the food industry and the Food Standards Agency about what kind of labeling would make it easy for people to determine what's in the food they're buying if they wish to do to read the labels. And the food industry has deliberately taken an obfuscatory approach, not unifying behind the single clearest approach to labeling, but trying to spread and confuse people naturally because that suits them. And what we say is that once the Food Standards Agency has carried out their research on these different pilot schemes, and if a clear answer emerges, then the food industry should fall in behind that, whether it's the multiple traffic light system, Sainsbury's Wheel of Health, or the GDA system. And if industry doesn't fall in behind it, there would be an ethical justification for regulation, which would have to be at a European level because labeling is a European competence. If I just go back a slide to protecting children, which is another important element of our thinking about the ethical framework in relation to obesity, we did see an important role for schools in terms of providing a culture of exercise and understanding of food. Of course, it's all too easy to foist extra work off onto hard-pressed school teachers, and one doesn't want to, in any sense, say that schools have total responsibility, but they can play an important part in altering the culture of young children. We also talked about the question of whether collecting surveillance data, and this reflects back to Anne's comments about infectious disease, on young children is ethically justifiable in relation to obesity. And we did recognize there's a danger of stigmatization here, therefore we felt that if weighing and measuring of young children is to be carried out, and it is important to collect the data to understand the secular trends, then it has to be done in a way that doesn't stigmatize children and make them feel they're being pointed at as fatties. We also talked in not in great detail about the question of whether there would be a justification in any circumstance for intervening in the home. And we could see that there may be child protection issues associated with children who are being put at really serious risk of in terms of their health through being extremely obese, even that if that involves intervening in the home. So finally, talking about the role of government, well, we've already mentioned that the government may have a role to regulate the food and other industries that influence the lifestyle and the environment in which we make choices, but also we felt that many of the, and this reflects points that were made in the Foresight report, many of the limits on our behavior in respect of, in relation to exercise, are limits that have been imposed by central and local government decisions about planning. And often these decisions, well-intentioned, increasing access and making it easier for people to get around, but they're also simultaneously often planning decisions that make it difficult to take exercise. In my own suburb of Oxford, the council is just about to redo the road system, and in doing so, they're going to widen the road and reduce the size of the footpath and the cycle tracks. Well, there's a policy decision made with the intent of increasing the speed of traffic flow, but making it more difficult for people to travel in ways other than by car. And we particularly thought that those who are responsible for implementing planning policy, namely the planners themselves and architects who are implementing building design, should have as part of their training, just as they may be trained to think about energy efficiency, and they have to indeed now consider energy efficiency of buildings, they should consider the physical activity implications. So, finally, and just quickly winding up, we looked at the question of whether the cost of the NHS of treating obesity, which were drawn out very clearly a few years ago by the National Audit Office and then extended by the Foresight team, should lead us to a view that says people who have got themselves into the position of being extremely large should be denied treatment. And there are some health trusts that have already suggested this is what they will do. And our view was, because of the complexity of the causes, it would be inappropriate to say that it's anybody's fault that they are obese, and that blaming of individuals would be inappropriate. So we didn't think there was an ethical justification for denying treatment, but we did think that there could be a justification for saying to people that if the treatment would be more effective, if associated with behavior change, that it would be right for clinicians to appeal to individuals to change their behavior, provided help in behavior change was offered. It's not enough to say you need to change your behavior associated with this hip replacement if no help is offered with behavioral change. So that covers very briefly the chapter on obesity, and I'm prepared to take a couple of questions before the chairman calls for the coffee break.